You're listening to Hearing Our Heritage, the podcast where we preserve the voices and stories of the older generation and make them accessible to younger ears. We pay tribute to those who have paved the way and learn from their lived experiences. I'm your host, Katie Pierce.
My name's Edna Arlene Sorensen Baldwin. I'm 94 years old. I was born in Salt Lake City, Salt Lake County on October 26, 1931 at the Salt Lake County Hospital.
Arlene Baldwin is a kind, loving, and resilient woman who has enjoyed a beautiful life full of rich experiences and close family ties. She's no stranger to hardship, but no matter what she's encountered, she's met it with strength, optimism, and deep faith in Christ. She was born in Salt Lake City in 1931, right in the middle of the Great Depression. Her family had very little, but they made the most of what they had and shared a very strong bond. As the oldest child of six, Arlene took on responsibility early. She left high school halfway through her senior year so she could work and help give her younger siblings opportunities she didn't have herself. At just 18 years old, Arlene met Byron Reed Baldwin while working at the Pronto Pup as a waitress. They married in 1950 and began building a wonderful life and family. Together, they raised five amazing children, Diane, Daryl, Dale, Donnie, and Dairdy. Arlene was, and still is, a very involved mother, spending countless hours supporting her children in their many sports and activities, all while running the Rose Shop in Idaho Falls. Her home was busy and full of love. An accomplished artist, baker, knitter, and homemaker, Arlene has always shared her talents freely with others. Known affectionately as the Candy Grandma, she is the heart of her family and a devoted matriarch to her five children, 20 grandchildren, 51 great-grandchildren, and four great-great-grandchildren. Throughout her life, Arlene has held fast to her faith in Heavenly Father and Jesus Christ. Her story begins before she was even born with her parents, Dorothy Anderson and Henry Bernhard Sorensen.
My mother's name was Dorothy Anderson, and my dad's name was Henry Bernhard Sorensen, with an E-N, which depicts it as Danish instead of Swedish. My dad finished sixth grade and my mother eighth, and then during that time, there was just no money around. My dad joined the Marines when he was 17 because of his home life. His dad and his mother, who was Anna Sorensen, they came over from Denmark and they went to down into Utah to live there where the Saints were. And my grandpa's girl that he really liked was named Marie. And she came at the same time with her husband and they went to the same area. My grandmother Anna died of kidney failure when she was like 42. My dad was in the Marines, couldn't even come home for this funeral. And then Marie's husband died too. So they got together and Marie was my dad's stepmother. And there, between them, there was 11 children. Then the Second World War came around and Marie's five boys all joined up together and went into the service. And she always had wonderful Christmas parties. They had a parlor where they had real candles on the trees and they always had a present for everybody under the tree. But when the war started and all her boys went to war, she changed and she just wouldn't have any more parties. She spent her time sitting in front of the radio listening to news. And one of her boys, Art, went down with the ship. They never saw his body or anything. Two of these boys, Francis and Alvin, were injured in the war, and they died from those injuries later while they were still young. But I remember Christmases at her house. She always had this big fancy dinner, and she had long hair that she could sit on. This was his stepmother. And they had this neat house they'd lived in their whole life, and they were taking it for the highway. It was going to come right through there, Redwood Road Highway. And she told her husband, I don't want to move. I don't want to move out of this house. And when they went to move her that day, she was dead. So she never had to leave her house. And my mother's side, my grandfather, he died when I was 10 years old. But he loved to take me and sit on his lap and to talk to me, you know. And my mother was a beautiful pianist. He would make her sit for hours playing the piano for him. But my grandmother, during the Depression years and that, she used to bake suckers out of taffy. And then she had a popcorn machine on her front porch that she made popcorn and people could come by it. And then she would had a little red wagon her two little youngest boys had, and she would make pies. And they would wander around the neighborhood selling these pies. And that's how she made money for them to even live that time. The grandparents on both sides came over when they joined the church and came to Utah. In fact, on my mother's side, they were Andersons. My great-grandfather was sent from the church up to Brigham City to start the United Order. But he was a polygamist, and he got arrested for polygamist and was sent to Boise to jail. And then when he came back, got out, he got a note from the governor of Wyoming, and they said that they would not be held liable for being polygamists, that they would come up to Wyoming, settle some of the country in Wyoming. So he took his two wives and went up to Grover, Wyoming, which is up by Afton, and settled a town there, opened a lumber mill. One day he got hit in the head with a log coming through, and it killed him when he was 62.
Arlene's parents, Dorothy and Henry, met through a mutual friend who was Dorothy's boyfriend at the time, and Henry was off serving in the Marines. But eventually, the pair found their way to each other.
My dad had a friend named Rass, and they were real good buddies. And my mother was Rass's girlfriend. So anyway, Rass introduced Henry, or Red. They called him Red. My dad was real redheaded. And Rass introduced them together. Well, it was click. And so, but my dad was in the Marines and he was just home on a leave. So then he headed back and he wrote her a letter and gave it to Rass and told him to give it to her. Well, he forgot. So she didn't hear from him. It'd been about a year later, Rass found the letter. So he gave it to her. And of course, she was all gung-ho, you know. And when he got back on his next leave, he came and they started dating and she forgot all about Rass. So anyway, he came home and saw her, and I don't know how long it was after that, but my dad says they went swimming up in Northern Salt Lake. His story is that he asked her to marry him and then held her under the water till she said yes. Anyway, they got married on her birthday, which was the 24th of September. And of course, it was during the Depression, and in her journals, my mother, every month, she was so upset because she wasn't pregnant, but she's married 4 months when she got pregnant with me. And my mother had and dad had 6 children. There were 2 boys and 4 girls. I'm the oldest of the children. I was born during the Depression. There was no work and there was absolutely no money. My dad was a molder, which is steel, and you make molds like if you want to make something steel. So my dad talks about having went along the railroad tracks and picked up coal that fell off of the cars in order to bring it home and use it to heat us in the winter. So they would move into places and they'd live until they'd get kicked out because they couldn't pay the rent, and then they'd get another one. And they said that's what they had to do at that time in their life. So they were pretty poor. They decided to move to Idaho Falls because dad had a chance to be working a foundry up here. His wage was $2 a day. And usually they didn't get it. They had to take their wage in food or something that someone bartered. It just was not money. He was made a partner in this, in the foundry. But my mother hated it here because she missed her mother. So she bugged him until they moved back to Salt Lake City, which was the wrong thing for them because the Depression was still going on at that time. It took a good 10 years. Actually, what happened to change the Depression was Second World War. My dad was in the Marines when he was younger. And after the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, he was really gung-ho. He was right down there immediately to sign up. Well, he was married and had 3 kids, and he was also a molder, which was something they needed for the war. So they wouldn't let him go, and he was so upset he couldn't go.
Not long after her parents were married, Arlene came along as the first of 6 children. She was born in Salt Lake City in the midst of the Great Depression.
My mother never was really strong. She had a bad back, and my mother was so involved with her kids. But my mother, she loved Christmas, and she always gave us Christmases that were unbelievable. She would charge everything, and then she'd spend all year paying it off. But I mean, I'm sure they were big presents, but as I remember, it'd be like 10 or 20 for everybody under there. And she always was that way. Her whole life was her kids. She tended kids in order to earn a little bit of extra money. $1.25 a day to tend a child and feed them lunch. And she'd have them all day. And she did that to earn just a little bit of money to buy Christmas or buy things for us. But she loved her kids. That's all. Loved her family. And my mother drew a lot. She did some beautiful work. And she used to make little bonnets for babies. And then she would do this rosebud embroidery it was gorgeous. And when my mother would go up to town on Saturday, every Saturday she'd window shop. She didn't buy anything much. She'd buy at Walmart. She'd buy a big thing of popcorn. It was a dime. And she used to bring that home to us. And she always was buying new oil cloths to put on her table. That was her big deal, to go window shop and buy popcorn and oil cloth for her table. But just her kids were her life. And when we all started moving away, it just about wiped her out. You know, it was really, really hard on her. Once we were all left, my mother and dad moved into this little dump that was in back of a grocery store. And it was a horrible place. And I don't know, we tried to help a little bit. And my dad was going to have surgery to replace a hip. So I decided I'd go down. I got down there and I went in, and my mother was in bed. So I just talked to her. I said, I'm here. So I went to go in the other bed. And she said, well, will you sleep with me? Why just get in bed with me? And I said, okay. So I did. Well, the next day I had to get up early to get up to the hospital. So I left. And in the meantime, someone picked my mother up and took her to my other sister's house. And while she was there, she had some kind of an episode. I don't know what it was. And they had to call the ambulance. They took her down to the hospital and they called me and said, we'd just take mom to the hospital. So I hurried down real fast, clear down in Murray. So I went tearing down there. When I went in, I asked, could I see Mrs. Ortson? She said, well, she's gone. She died. So there we were down there for my dad's having surgery, and she just died. And it was horrible. She was 69. And then my dad, he was on dialysis. He had bad kidneys, so he was on dialysis. And we decided he'd move up here. And he stayed here for over a year. But he got so bad with his dialysis and out of it a little bit. You know, he'd call in the middle of the night and all that stuff, that we finally took him to a home. And while he was in there, he had a stroke and he passed away. He was 71, I think, 71 or 72. I am the first woman, now my sisters have ever make it past the 60s on both sides for years. So I figured I was out of here. It must be something I have to do. I hope I don't get it done.
The love her parents showed her stayed with Arlene throughout her life. It shaped the way she remembers her early years.
We moved all around, but the main house was 9th East, in between 33rd and 27th South, right there. And there was, my grade school was in there, which was Roosevelt Grade School. And I went to junior high at Irving Junior High up in Sugar House. And then while I was in there, my mother and dad sold their house and we moved out to Murray, Utah, into a little house. And mother had her last two children while she was there. And when she got pregnant both times, she was just a basket case. She was so upset because of that time. My dad was not in the church at all. I mean, he had been baptized, but he was not a churchgoer. And he drank. And there was a big contention. When he didn't come home from work, he'd stop somewhere and drink. But he'd always bring a quart of ice cream when he came. So us kids, we thought that was great. Why is my mother so mad about that? As I got older and I knew where he'd go, I would go in and say, you got to go home. That was a bossy little thing. But you had to live it to be it. It was tough. We had some tough things going on, my poor little mother. But eventually, down the road, he got up and they got sealed in the temple. And all of us kids, all six of us kids, had temple recommends and were able to go and be sealed to him. So that was really nice. My My dad called me Beanie. That was my nickname. I don't know where he got it from. My dad put names on everybody. My next sister was Little Guy, and my third sister was Popeye. But my dad wanted a boy so bad, and he got me, so I was his boy for a while. He taught me how to shoot. I used to go rabbit hunting with him, and we fished together, and we went to the ball games. We would go see the Salt Lake City Bees all the time. But him and I were very, very close. I thought I had a wonderful childhood. Us kids were so close, and we kind of lived out in the country part of the way. They had a big pond. We went ice skating in the winter, and we played mainly with paper dolls, it seemed to me, and color books and crayons. But paper dolls were a really big thing. And we would cut out, and then we'd make our own, make clothes for them and all that kind of stuff. And my mother buy butcher paper, and she'd hang it on the wall, and we would color in our books. And then we would cut the things out and put them on here, make a city and stuff like that. But the big thing us girls did, you know, movie stars was the big thing in that time. We would write to these movie stars. Everybody had a crush, and you'd write to them, and they'd send you a big photo back, you know, the fan club. But we played a lot of outside games. We played baseball was a big thing in our neighborhood. We had neighborhood baseball teams, and we swam a lot. We played like kick the can and Annie I over and hide and seek, all stuff like that. And we went to the movies every Saturday for 10 cents. And they had usually had some kind of thing where they would draw numbers and you could win stuff while you're there. And always at the movies, they had a news thing first. And I used to enjoy that. So, and then, of course, we always had cereals. They would end, and the next week they'd have another cereal of Flash Gordon and Lone Ranger and those kind of things. And I don't know. We made our own fun. One funny story. Our house in Murray, Utah had a screened-in back porch. I asked Mom if I could make it into a bedroom for me. I know I was about 14. She said I could. I had a fish in a glass bowl for a pet and put it out on the porch with all my other belongings. Well, it worked out great during the summer, but I woke up one morning and my fish was frozen solid in his glass bowl. So I decided, I guess it was time to move back in. I managed to survive to 90, so I guess it didn't harm me too much. Another thing about it, our home life, it was weird. Telephones were just coming out, and where we lived, and Murray is where we'd moved to, we were on a 10-party line, and you could hardly ever pick it up, or you'd be talking, and someone would pick up and start listening. When we got to junior high, then I had to change schools, and because I went to the city schools at that time, did their 7th and 8th grade together. So I had 7th and 8th grade together. So when I had to change to the Granite School District, they put me into the 9th, and all my friends that I'd grown up with were the 8th. So I just didn't get along. I didn't fit in. And I didn't have all the neat clothes. Mother was still making me little dresses with ties on the back, you know. And I hated school. I never, ever in my whole life went to a school dance. One time we had a daughter and father thing at the school, and I got my dad to go to that with me. I was so proud of my dad because he looked so young. He had that marine build and carriage anyway, and it happened. I was the youngest with the youngest father or something, or won something. But I loved the sports in high school, and I would go to all the basketball games and all the football games and all of that. I had girlfriends that lived right down the street from me that we were real good friends with. And I hated school with a passion. I hated school. And so when I was a senior, I worked as a car hop. And halfway through, I got a chance to work for a company. So I just quit. I didn't graduate. And I never regretted not graduating. I just went to work for a company that kept credit reports on businesses. I started out as a file clerk and then as a telephone operator there with the switchboards with, you know, plug-ins. And then I went to typing with the dictaphone. I learned in school, I was there long enough to learn to type and shorthand and all that kind of stuff. You know, and most of the dating I did with kids not in school. And when I was dating, most of the time they didn't have cars. So we'd catch the city bus and go uptown and go to a movie and catch the bus home. I always said it's tough to make out on a bus. So you had to worry about that anyway.
Oldest meant Arlene grew up quickly, often helping care for her younger siblings and feeling responsible for them from a young age.
You know, I was always very, very protective of my sisters. My oldest sister next to me is Gloria, and my next sister is Sharon. My brother is next, Harold. And then my next brother is Stephen. And my youngest sister is Gail, and she is the youngest, and she is about a year and a half older than my oldest daughter. And I had her a lot. And I've always felt her more as a daughter than a sister until the later years. And we were very poor. And I remember my growing up, I didn't have a lot. So I went to work after high school and I bought stuff for my sisters so that they could go to high school and be somebody. And actually it worked out. My middle sister was a cheerleader and the sister next to her was the senior class vice president. So they all went through school loving it and everything. They didn't have my experiences in school.
Pretty soon, Arlene met a man named Byron Baldwin. They fell in love, got married young, and shared more than 60 years of marriage.
I got married. I was 18, and Byron was almost 21. And I was car hopping at a restaurant named the Prado Pup. He came in with a bunch of guys. Anyway, I waited on him, and he kept kidding around with me and everything. I told him, I said, well, I work till 2 o'clock. And he said, well, can I come and take you home? And I said, well, we live around the corner. That's okay. And about the time I got off, he came back, took me, and we drove around home, took 5 minutes, sat in the driveway for a while and visited. And then he liked me. And the thing that was interesting is I was leaving in 3 days to go to Bremerton, Washington, to live with my uncle because he did these wax dolls and he was going to teach me how to do that process. So I left. Well, we wrote a little bit and then he sent me flowers and then one day opened the door and there he was. I come to take you home. We want to get married. And I'd only been with him like 2 days. So I came home and that was like January or February around in there. And we didn't get married till in May, but we went to Vegas to get married, and his sister and her husband was going to go with us. But as it turned out, they couldn't go, so we went by ourselves and got married down there. And I hadn't known him very long, but it seemed to work. We're married over 60 years, so there seems to be a magnetism. I mean, he just was cute. He had dark and had real curly hair, and he was a great jokester. And I was kind of naive, and he would pull these things, but I liked him really well.
And just like that, the newlyweds began their life together.
We built an apartment in his sister's basement. My husband had saved some money, and we stayed there till the baby was born. So it was like 9 months or so. And we bought a place in Sugar House, but this place has spiders so bad that we lived there 1 month and I was out. Then we moved around, and then he went on Traveler to Rock Springs, and we lived up there for a year or so, and then came home, and then we had a house on Redwood Road that we built out of cinder block, a little four-room place, loved it, cost us $4,900 for our first house. So then we had another baby, so we had three, and so Byron and I built two big bedrooms and a big room on the back of this house for food storage, because I was a great canner and it was nice. We had property. We had fruit trees and usually raised a cow or beef anyway. My youngest sister is Gail. And when she was growing up, Gail spent lots of times with us because she and Diane were the same age. And my mother was not well. And I had that little girl a really lot and Steve a really lot at my house and kept him there. Well, in fact, my brother Steve had rheumatic fever and he was in the hospital and he wasn't supposed to be able to run around a lot. So I took him home and I kept him for those 6 months at my house so that I could keep him quiet and take care of him. And Gail and my daughter Diane, I used to make matching clothes. People would think that they were twins. I'd take them places, and those same dresses on and that. It was fun. I was just happy that I could do it. I was happy that I made my siblings' lives a little better. Because I don't know what mom and dad would have done.
Pretty soon, the kids began to come along and quickly became Arlene's focus. She devoted her life to raising her five wonderful children, Diane, Daryl, Dale, Donnie, and Dairdy.
First is Diane. We were thrilled to death. She is very, very independent, very spiritual, very hardworking, a very amazing mother. She's fiercely protective of me. Growing up, she was in the French club, and she was also in Pep Club is what it was. They came to all the games and stuff like that. So that was important to her. She did go to Europe for one summer as a student exchange. And so that was exciting for her. And she met her husband up at school at Rick's. Daryl Reed. I was trying to think of a name that would fit him. And it has to be unique. I can't think of anything else. He is the jokester of the family. Nothing is ever serious. He's always funny. He's always out for a good time. Always wants a party. He's real close to all his nieces and nephews. He did things with them growing up. In school, he was an athlete all the way through and played in all the teams and was really good. He went down for drafted down to BYU, and he played baseball down there for 1 year, and then he went on a mission to Missouri. Then when he came home, he went up to Rick's and played there for 2 years. Dale Keith, he's very innovative. He makes up games. He makes all his own cards. And he makes a book. When a child, they get to be 4 years old, they get a book made by him with they're the main character in, and he puts pictures in it, everything. We followed Dale a lot to where he played ball. He was drafted to Boise. It was fun. He's the one that was drafted into baseball. Him and his wife went and went back to Wisconsin and played there. Next is Donnie, and it's Donald Ray, and he was good at all sports, and he was a basketball coach for 40 years at different schools, and he's a whiz at math. He says things how they are, and he's strong, and he's direct, and he's the one that played at Gonzaga. They put him into the Hall of Fame at Gonzaga, right next to Bing Crosby. Dairdy. Oh, she's my baby. She tells me everything. And I'm her sounding board. And she's very spiritual. She's very loving. She's very sensitive. She's a fifth grade teacher, and her kids love her. And they all fight to get their class.
After many years of hoping, the Baldwin family was sealed in the Idaho Falls Temple.
My youngest was like three, maybe. We were all kneeling around the altar, my five kids and me and Byron. I heard all this crying. I opened my eyes and it was my husband. He was just sobbing. And I thought, he's just been touched by the spirit here, I think. The funny thing about that was my daughter and her husband had got theirs the same day as we did. So on her wedding day. And so only in the flower shop, I had all her wedding flowers to do, too. So I had to do all the flowers, get to the temple, make sure all the kids got there. My girlfriend brought my little one. After we were finished, we had to hurry and get around for the reception and do all of that. So it was a really busy day.
The Baldwin family spent their earlier years in Utah, but eventually moved to Idaho Falls. There, they lived in their family home for 36 years.
He was an insulator, and he traveled up, usually kind of went all over. So he would be gone a lot. But he moved up here to Idaho Falls to go on a job. And so we came up for the summer. Well, it turns out right after they started, they shut that down. The government shut it down. So he had to go on a traveler. And I thought, well, I might as well stay here as go home. So I did. And so then when he came back and he liked it here. So we said, let's look for a business. So that's what we did here. And then we decided to buy the flower shop. So then he quit. And then he got a chance to go back again were working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. And that made him enough money that we could buy our house here. So we lived there 36 years, I think. And then it was like 3,000 square feet. It was nice. It had three bedrooms above, three bedrooms. It had a sunken living room, a big kitchen and dining room mixed. And they had a little room in the back bar. We had it for books, shelves and stuff. And then downstairs, I had two bedrooms. And then we had a workshop down there where Byron could work with wood. And then we had a big room where we had a pool table and ping pong table. And we bought a lot of machines, you know, pinball type machines. And I liked that. I would much rather my kids were at my house than the other people's house.
About a year after moving to Idaho Falls, Arlene and Byron bought the Rose Shop, which they grew into a thriving business.
My best friend here's parents owned the flower shop and they wanted to sell it. The thing is, we bought it and the flower shop was just in the hotel. It was just a counter and a little refrigerator. So we rented a place out on First Street and it was big and nice and it worked. We built it up a lot. So we had a pretty good sized business there. And the kids was nice because they all could work there. But once we got moved into our new area, business doubled and tripled and it was amazing. We became from the least in the town probably to the leading florist here. So
Arlene and Byron created a wonderful family life for their kids, full of unbirthday parties and trips up to the cabin.
I was very strict about supper. It was on the table at 6 o'clock. That's where we spent most of our family time, around that dinner table. We was talk and talk and talk and play games. And we'd do things like naming all the capitals and we'd go around and we'd do things that were fun like that. But when we went anywhere in cars or anything, Dale, who's one innovative one, would make up games and we'd have all these games. But it was funny because we'd go to eat somewhere and he'd make up a game where you're flipping something and just silly games as other people would watch. And then we'd leave with him and there they were doing the same thing. And at Christmas time, we always had a gingerbread night. I made all these gingerbread men. So, and even as they got older, all the little kids would come and we would decorate gingerbread men. And we always have a Christmas party with the grandkids and Santa Claus comes. And when all the kids were home, I used to have unbirthday parties. So I would buy them all a present, put them at the table and buy a cake and I'd say, happy unbirthday. And my husband would come in, what'd I forget? But they loved that. And then another thing I liked to do, I would put things under their pillows at night. They'd go to bed and find things. So I thought that was fun too. But my own birthday parties was a real challenge. But I think probably the thing we did most as family was go to our cabin because we all loved it up there. So it was had two bedrooms and a bath and a front room and kitchen on the main floor. And then it had an upstairs. It was an open loft. We had a bed on one end and two beds on the other end. And we had electric blankets on them and stuff. So Dale loved to fish and he fly fish. He liked to do that. And then we all just loved it up there at Island Park.
Along with all those family traditions, sports became a central part of life at the Baldwin household, and they were raising some real athletes.
By moving up here, it's a smaller place. I think they had better opportunities because they all three were the star on everything they played and did. And actually, Daryl and Dale both ran track in school, too. They were both fast. But after we moved up here, Byron was a traveler, and I had Daryl alone over trying to get him on a little league team. And he had braces on his teeth, but he had one of those headgears they used to have. And I was afraid that nobody would pick him up because they wouldn't think he could play or anything. So I volunteered to be the secretary. And the guy that finally took him said, that's the best thing he ever done because he got all three of them in, and they were all exceptional. Donnie, he played when he was in the second grade. He played on the fourth grade basketball team, and he was a star. And he also, when he played, they played T-ball. He would get like 7 home runs in a row, you know, every time he'd be up. And, of course, we'd go to basketball and football and baseball. We did all of it. We were busy going to all the games on Saturdays.
A As busy as family life was, Arlene still found time to serve others. Over the years, she volunteered at the hospital, eventually working in the emergency room, while also serving in many church callings.
When we moved up here, I volunteered at the hospital, at the old people's home there. And so I did that for a while. And then I went and volunteered in the emergency room. So I worked there for a long time. And they asked me if I'd like to work. And I said, sure. So I became the unit secretary. And they built a new hospital, and I moved to that with it. So I was like 26 years. I worked at in the emergency rooms at the hospitals. It was during the flower shop, too, some of it. And I love the hospital. I love the emergency room. So I did that for a long time. And starting early, I worked in the primary. And a funny story about the primary. Daryl's name was Daryl, and my daughter, Diane, couldn't say it. So she called him Bruh, my brother. She called him Bruh. So he got up, and it was his birthday. And the lady was announcing, said, "Little Bra Baldwin." And he was just mortified. So we had to get him be called Bra. That was funny. Anyway, so for primary, I used to do the seagulls. They used to be seagulls, larks, and bluebirds. But I taught them how to crochet. And I did young women's. I was in young women's presidency. And then I was on state level, both those. I caught release society. But my big job, they made me area sports director, which they used to have area sports. They don't do that anymore. But my area went from Salmon to Arco to Shelley and half of Idaho Falls. And I was in that like 6 years. So I had to arrange all these tournaments. It was really a job.
As the kids grew up and life slowed down a bit, Arlene and Byron found time to travel, eventually spending many winters in Yuma, Arizona, and making memories along the way.
After the kids were gone, I went on a tour thing on a bus that was called Hear America Sing. I think it went to all these singing. That's how we found out about Branson, Missouri. So then I went twice on a trip like that with my sisters. And I've been on like 7 cruises. It's on our 50th wedding anniversary. The kids took us to Mexican Riviera on a cruise. That was really fun. And then I've been at Alaska 3 times. And then after Byron passed away, we went with my kids. We went on a fall leaf tour. Okay, went all the way up the coast, up into Canada, and down as far as Rhode Island. We went out and saw a lot of stuff. And we got out in Boston and saw stuff. And that was fun. And we went to Yuma in the winter for 20 years, Byron and I. And we had a park model down there. We loved it down there, right on the border next to Mexico. It was like 10 minutes to go into Alcadonas, Mexico. So we used to go down there quite often. But it was just fun to go down and sit and listen to the music, play, and have dinner and stuff.
Arlene is a truly talented artist. Her award-winning knit pieces and beautiful paintings fill her home and have been lovingly shared with family and friends who treasure her many creations.
When I was young, we learned to crochet and knit in primary. That's what you did. So I kept up the crochet, and so I have done that my whole life. And I have always drawn. Then after my kids left, I just decided to pick it up again. So I tried, and I went to 2 or 3 classes, and all of my sisters do the same. So we do it together, and it's been fun.
Beyond her knitting and painting, Arlene is also famous in her family for her cooking and baking.
Big thing is my chocolate chip cookies, and I always keep them frozen so they can eat them here. But I had a special pork rib recipe they like. And they like my ham fried rice. I have a family recipe that's spaghetti and cheese. And it's something that you have macaroni and cheese, but spaghetti, it's a special. And all of the girls love it, but none of the guys are real fond of it. I don't know about it, but the guys all like, but probably my most famous thing is chili getty. Everybody loves chili getty. So usually if they come for dinner, I mean, that's what I make. And they love my carrot cake.
Arlene and Byron spent more than 60 years together. Through the ups and downs of life, they stayed close, loving and supporting one another. Since Byron's passing, Arlene has found comfort in the knowledge that they will be together again someday.
My husband was an amazing father. He adored his children and did everything with them. We never took a vacation ever that the kids didn't come with us. But he also liked to drink, and he also liked to stay with his friends after work and stuff. So I had started having that same sort of thing that we had with Dad, and I wasn't going to do that. So I had two little kids then, and he was on Christmas Eve, and he worked at Green River. And on his way in, they stopped to drink, all of them. And he didn't come home and didn't come home and didn't come home. And finally, when he came home and they carried him up and threw him on the bed, he was so drunk. And it was Christmas Eve, and we were supposed to go to my parents in the morning, and we had to put things together. And I was cried. Oh, I was so upset. And he told me, he said, I promise never again in my life will I drink on any time on Christmas. So, and he never did again, but he quit, you know, when he got up here, he quit. And the reason he quit was because he was scared his daughter was going to get married. He couldn't go to the temple with her. He was an amazing dad. He everything for those kids. I mean, he just played with them continually. He was like one of them. They played ball. They did this. I mean, always, everything was with the kids. So everybody loved Byron. He was just happy-go-lucky jokester. He was funny. He always had a funny thing to say. Working in the asbestos gave him asbestosis in his lungs, and he couldn't breathe. He was on oxygen. And I mean, it was pretty tough for him. He wanted to hang around so bad. I wanted him to, but he was like 81. I mean, of course, I knew that he was going, but he got to the point that they wouldn't let him drive a car. So we used to drive up there for his doctor appointments. And when he got older, he got very emotional over me doing all this stuff. Oh, I should be doing that. You shouldn't have to take that out. But I said, you know, we were married for better or for worse, sickness or health. I said, I don't mind. Just let me do it. But it was really, really hard on him. Our 60th, he was on oxygen and kind of slumped over. But he had some friends come his friend from when he was young. And he was so excited to see him. I just still remember that. But all his kids that he coached came to his 60th, you know, to see him. And he was just so happy.
With a lifetime of experiences under her belt, Arlene has wisdom, faith, and love that she wants to share with her family.
The way I want to be remembered is kind, and don't sweat the little things. I've tried to save my worrying for the bigger things. The thing I like my grandkids, you know, I want them to be kind to each other, nice to their siblings. I have 20 grandchildren and 3 has passed, so I have 17 alive. I have 51 great-grandkids, and I love when they come. I always have candy, and I have creamies, and always have cookies. And I love all those little kids. Now the age I am awed by how much my children come and do things for me and look out for me. And everybody's always saying, there's always somebody at your house. That's because my children have not forgotten me. They come all the time, and I am so blessed. My heart is so full of gratitude for the family that I have been given. They are all such special people, and I could not have asked for better children or the mates that they have chosen. I am so thankful for my grandchildren and great-grandchildren, the young men that have given 2 years of their lives to go out and spread the gospel, the young women that have married and bore children. They have married mates that are strong in the church and raised their children to follow in their footsteps. The family that went before us are angels that look down on us and watch over us. I am so thankful for my family, for all they do for me and Gramps. I am humbled by all the Lord has done for me. Just follow the teaching of the gospel and you could not go wrong. The Lord loves us all.
As you've heard, Arlene's life has been full of hard work, twists and turns, and countless moments of showing up for others. Through it all, she's given generously and created a home filled with beautiful artwork, laughter, and lasting traditions. She is a light in the lives of those who know her, as her devotion to Christ shines brightly. Arlene's amazing legacy can be seen in the lives that she's influenced for good, especially those of her posterity. A huge thank you to the Brooks family for making this episode possible and to Arlene for being interviewed. If there's someone that you would like to have featured on Hearing Our Heritage, email us at hearingourheritage@gmail.com or visit our website, hearingourheritage.com.